Broadcasting live from Roberta's in Bushwick, Brooklyn, you're listening to HeritageRadioNetwork.com.
I'm Sam Edwards. I'm third generation Cure Master from S. Wallace Edwards & Sons in Surrey, Virginia. We support the Heritage Radio Network because we believe in the cause and what they're doing. They're supporting family-raised livestock, small family farms, certified humane, pasture-raised, antibiotic-free. Basically, we take the products from Heritage Foods USA and make them into Serrano-style hams, prosciutto-style hams, bacon, sausage, like my grandfather did. You can find us at SurreyFarms.com or VirginiaTraditions.com.
HeritageRadioNetwork.com. I'm Curtis B. Wayne, your host. This week we're going to talk about sustainable forestry and all sorts of eco-freaky things with Stubby Wormbold from City Log. Stubby, are you there?
Not yet?
All right. Jack is going to get Stubby on the line. Also in studio with us, Vox Populi, voice of the people, is Quentin Stanton. An architect in training. Quentin will soon be an architect. Yes, Quentin?
Yes.
Excellent.
If all goes well.
Excellent. He's in the midst of taking the architect's registration exam, which is an important first step to being a practicing architect. And then you'll be an architect. And then you can, you know, have groupies and cool stuff.
If that was only the case, yes.
Jack, let me know when Stubby comes on. All right. One of the really interesting things about this emerging world of being more aware of the natural resources that otherwise might go wasted is the notion of harvesting trees that fall when there are windstorms or that become older or diseased in cities. Now, a standard approach that many cities have to trees and timber like that is to chip them. And we know that wood chips are very acid, and that is a toxic problem. I mean, wood mulch we use in a garden to keep weeds down, but if you have a patch of ground that has all this wood mulch, you have to amend the soil by putting in lime in order to balance the pH of the soil before you can plant. So instead of, for example, when trees fall in Central Park, and it happens all the time, as the weather becomes increasingly volatile. Whether you believe in global warming being caused by human activity or not, it's hard to dispute that the planet's climate is becoming more energetic. And so we get these microbursts and more extreme weather. And so trees do fall in Central Park. And if there is no place for this timber to be harvested and seasoned and sawn, then it just turns into wood chips. And there's only so much we can do with wood chips. We could pelletize the wood and distribute that as fuel for wood-burning fireplaces that can run on pellets. But timber could be a lot more useful.
We've got Stubby on the line.
Excellent. Good afternoon, sir.
Good afternoon, Curtis. I got Andy Tomlinson with me.
Excellent. In no particular order, these are the things I'd like to talk with you fellas again, or not again. Stubby, you were going to come on, but somehow we didn't make our connection. This afternoon, I'd like to talk about City Logs. how it is that you help different municipal agencies harvest fallen or diseased trees. I think that's a really great thing. I want to hear about your urban sawmill that's in development.
Right. Well, actually, we're running.
Okay. Good.
We should share the good news. There, we have the portable mill on there now. We're
Wait! Don't blow your wad. We'll get to it. We'll get to it. This is just my list of topics. One, what is City Logs? Two, what about your sawmill? Three, what about Black Locust? Four, okay. Four. If time presents, I also understand that you're a distributor of Swedish composting toilets. Okay, those are the lists of things that we want to talk about. Let's take a little break, come back, and dive in, and then you can talk, all right?
Sounds good.
Thank you.
To make you feel much better than you could know. Better than you could
dust
know.
Dust you down from tip to toe.
Dust you down from tip to toe.
Show you how the garden grows.
Show you how the garden
Hold
grows.
Hold you steady as you go.
Hold steady as you
join the chorus if you can.
It'll make of you an honest man.
Let me bring you love from the fields. Poppies red and roses filled with summer rain. To heal the wound and still the pain that threatens again and again.
Welcome back. This is Burning Down the House on HeritageRadioNetwork.com. I'm Curtis B. Wayne. We're here with two guys from City Logs. W. Wormbold, and I didn't catch your name, the other fellow.
Andy Tomlinson.
Andy, how are you?
Thank you. Very good.
Very good. I'm so glad you could join us. Well, so first up, City Logs. Tell us about what City Logs is, how long you've been doing it, and why it's good. Why should we know about City Logs?
Well, thank you, Curtis. City Logs is basically we take unwanted urban trees and we repurpose them into usable building products, from a railway tie to hardwood flooring to cabinets to furniture. And what we take there, it's normally going to be ground up or landfilled or thrown away, and we salvage that material and repurpose it for a better, higher usage.
That's a great idea. How long have you been doing that?
Oh, it's about 20 years now.
That's great. And do you work with the Central Park Conservancy, for example?
Well, we're having some initial discussions with the people in New York City, and that's something... A lot of the trees, we like to call ourselves tombstone salesmen. We memorialize trees. So a lot of trees are special to individuals, especially trees that come from parks or historical locations. So that's some people that we should be talking more to.
Uh-huh. And, is it difficult to convince a municipality to let you have their trees?
Not really. Once they grasp the concept, they're quite enthusiastic. It's just that what we do is kind of unique. The first time we describe ourselves or our business model, and most people go, and then you have to repeat it, and either they understand it or they still don't understand it. So it's a very odd model, and the uniqueness of our City Logs is we'll take your tree from your backyard and bring your own wood from your own tree back as a new dining room table.
Wow.
Which is, even in the lumber business, is unheard of. And, we saw the urban tree, which has your hammock hooks and your nails and all the other things that the city tree is subject to. So it does have a lot of more character, and we promote that character because the tree is grown under a lot more stress. And we actually generate a lot of product that is really beautiful with a swirl pattern and burls. And, for example, we're doing a job right now for the Brooklyn Botanical Garden, where we're taking ginkgo, an urban tree, and we're actually slicing that into veneer. And I personally believe that's the first time that's been done in North America.
Sounds totally unique to me. Quentin, have you heard of ginkgo veneer? No.
No, I'm not familiar.
What does ginkgo, when it's been veneered, look like?
It's a white, very much like a maple, but a wider wider growth ring. And, of course, the ginkgo tree is a tree that everybody loves to hate because the female drop the pods that start to stink and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
So it's, you know, heavily utilized in the urban. It's a pretty tough tree. So here we're slicing this into veneer, and they're gluing it up, and it's actually going to be coming back into the Brooklyn Botanical Gardens as an addition to their new buildings.
Wow. Well, we know from ordinary forestry that after a tree's been harvested, it needs to be seasoned. Do you season your timbers?
Yes, sir. Yeah, everything is. We run a traditional sawmill operation. The only thing is unique about us is our you know, we do not willingly cut trees down on the city log side. These are all trees that are coming down for disease, storm damage, you know, new construction, you know, normal pitfalls that happen to an urban or a city tree. So none of these trees are actively harvested.
Right. How about in a case of veneering, do you have to season that log first?
Yeah, everything is. Well, actually, if you do veneer, you want the tree, when they slice a log, a veneer log, they actually soak it in a hot pool for about 10 days to actually make it wet, so it slices very easily. So with the other aspects of the other traditional non-veneer wood, you want to saw it, you want to put it on sticks to air dry, and then we finish it up in a kiln. Uh-huh. And it's a process that takes, I would say, from start to finish, you're looking to 6 to 8 months from a raw log to a piece of furniture.
Mm-hmm. So your focus is more on millwork, cabinetry, fine furniture building, rather than producing lumber for building a house.
Right, where most of our focus is on a non-structural lumber, non-framing lumber. So we don't manufacture your 2x4s and 2x6 for your walls and your roof.
Mm-hmm.
But we'll make all the items that are visible. We'll make your hardwood flooring. We'll make your baseboards, your window trim, your kitchen cabinets, your stair parts, furniture items. We like to think that it's the stuff that people can touch and feel. The framing lumber, it's usually put up and covered with drywall, and people really don't know what's holding up their walls.
Right. Is that because of the trees that you get are tend to be hardwood shade trees that are beautiful trees and therefore are more traditionally the trees that are used for furniture making?
Yes, sir. That's exactly right.
So what kind of trees are you getting these days? You mentioned ginkgo.
Well, that's a unique one in the urban environment, but the area that we work in the Northeast here, we're in some of the finest Appalachian hardwoods in North America, and unfortunately the cities encroach in the forest, so you do have your red oaks, your white oaks, your walnuts, your maples, some ash, all your domestic species that we're familiar with, and that's, and it's a nice tight ring, a nice color, and it's beautiful. So we're sitting in prime hardwood country here.
Yeah, and then, so who are the... the woodworkers who then take your wood. How does that work?
Well, we're totally vertically integrated, so we'll actually come with our own truck, so we'll haul the logs away. The only thing we don't do is the falling. That's a separate industry. The arborist, you hire an arborist, and they're the gentleman who'll be climbing up a tree or hanging off of a saddle, 60, 70 feet in the air. But their product that they generate is the logs, and we'll take it from the logs. We have our own self-contained log truck. We haul it out to our sawmills. We have two facilities now, one in central Pennsylvania and one that we just established in Newark, New Jersey. And from there, we'll saw the material into boards. We basically scan the logs, get an idea what the people want for a finished type of product. We'll saw it for their specifications. Say if somebody wants a new dining room flooring done, we'll saw the lumber into 4/4. Or if they want some furniture items, we'll saw some thicker lumber, 6 or 8/4. And then we'll take it, we place it into our own dry, we let it air on sticks for a period of time, depending upon the weather conditions, and we finish it off in a dry kiln. And then we work with the Old Order Amish community in central Pennsylvania. So we have a whole network of craftsmen who do wonderful quality work, and we finish it off. One of our craftsmen will come with his horse and buggy and literally pick up a few boards off your pile, and then take it to a shop and fabricate a kitchen or flooring or millwork and bring it back.
So for people like me who don't really know the map of Pennsylvania all that well. Where are you compared with Hershey or Lancaster?
Well, we're midway between State College and Harrisburg. We're just up the Juniata. We're in Juniata County. That's our fabricating, and that's our traditional home. And we've out of there, we run within a 500-mile radius, following the lead U.S. Green Building yeah. Council guidelines. And now, like I said, we just started Newark, and we're actually sawing, you know, taking the logs and breaking them down into green lumber, and from there we'll ship the lumber to Pennsylvania, and then we'll finish it, dry it, and finish it for further manufacturing with the ultimate goal of actually manufacturing more value added in Newark. Like an example that we're looking to go into a hardwood flooring line specifically manufactured, you know, out of the urban wood in the metropolitan area.
Yeah. For my New York friends who may be architects, Penn State is in State College. It's smack in the middle of Pennsylvania, but on the northern side, not far off of I-80, which runs across the northern part of Pennsylvania. The Pennsylvania Turnpike runs across the southern half of Pennsylvania. But Pennsylvania is a big state, but it's good to hear that your processing facilities are within 500 miles so that we can recommend you as a source here in the Big Apple.
Right. Well, like I said, this is one of the reasons we established the Newark yard to reduce the logistics of moving raw logs, and it's more effective if we, you know, until we get our dry kilns into Newark and are built out in about a 24 to 28 month period, we can you know, at least saw it into lumber and then continue to value add it out in central PA.
That's good. Now, the reason that I know about City Logs is because you are a major player in terms of providing Black Locust. Tell us about Black Locust.
Well, Black Locust is a hobby that I developed. Had too much time in my log truck, and I was thinking of a way to give a product that would give a natural rot resistant that wasn't a tropical hardwood. And I was always familiar with the locust, and traditionally in the past it was used quite a bit for more manufactured items, and then it sort of fell out of usage in the early 1900s because there was other preservatives, chemical preservatives that could have been used, and you weren't limited to the restrictions of the locust tree. And but I thought, well, this would be an ideal product for decking and outdoor furniture applications, and this is what we've started to do, and that division is called Black Locust Lumber, and that is a traditional logging operation. We do have FSC chain of custody. We follow, you know, all the forestry guidelines, and that we basically are procuring locust, and then we're sawing it, and we're promoting it more into a decking program, a 5/4 by 6 or a 5/4 by 4,
mm-hmm.
More of a finished program where the architects or the homeowners can have a deck that'll last, you know, locust that'll last, you know, 40, 50 years, and non-chemical. There's no chemicals. It's a natural North American product, and we're sort of reintroducing the locust to the domestic market.
Well, we're with you on that.
Well, thank you.
It's a hard sell because everyone's been brainwashed to say Ipe. You know, it's like the girl from Ipanema. It's very exotic. It's Brazilian. It's wonderful. It looks like chocolate, but it comes from South America. And
well, the reason is that, and also, you know, the Ipe tree is spotty. They have to take a lot of other non-harvestable trees or valuable trees where they'll drop them to get the high-grade Ipe logs out of there, and they cause a lot more damage to the forest. And with the locust, it's traditionally been considered, in my lifetime, it's been considered more of a weed tree. And here we're coming and looking to buy one man's garbage and, you know, taking that and value-adding into a much usable, you know, native product.
Yeah. Where does most of your black locust come from?
Our locust runs, well, the traditional home range of locusts is basically the Appalachians, and we're right in the middle of it. So we're you know, within our mill location. We pull up Pennsylvania, western Maryland, West Virginia, Ohio. The home range of locusts we're pretty well placed in. So.
And I understand that locusts grow pretty fast, too.
Yeah, the uniqueness of a locust is that the tree has it's a unique tree. It's a pioneer species, so it'll come to recover old pastures or disturbed land, like mining sites or whatever. But it only lives to, it's short-lived to about a 25, 35-year lifespan of a tree, and then it's crowded out by the what they call the more noble species, like the oaks and the maples. But the timber from a locust will last 40, 50 years, so maybe even 60, I could say. And so you'll get almost two rotations of trees before the first board has rotted in service. So it's a very, very unique tree. It improves the soil. And actually, the locust was the first tree I discovered that was shipped, that was transplanted from the New World, from the Americas, to the Old World, to Europe. It was taken to an arborist, took it to France, and they've planted it over there because the Europeans valued its uniqueness.
Sort of like the potato coming from Peru and now over to Ireland and everywhere. Yeah, how cool. I've heard of a Norwegian product called Kibini, where they take maple and they treat it with wood waste, almost like wood alcohol, but a natural sort of polymer brew, and they'll cook their maple to give it rot resistance almost equal to teak. Have you heard about that?
No, I'm not.
Kebony.
It wouldn't surprise me that they have, some advanced techniques. The beauty of our locust is it's a very simple, traditional method. It's not
very hard. Right, and you don't have to do anything to it.
Right.
Right. Speaking of Norwegian maples, Jack, let's have another little break, and we'll come back and talk about your urban sawmill. Burning Down the House on HeritageRadioNetwork.com. I'm Curtis B. Wayne. We're talking about sustainable lumber. And now next we're going to talk about an urban sawmill in Newark, New Jersey. Is that correct?
Yes, yes. And hi, Curtis. This is Andy.
Hi, Andy.
We're about 3 months into the setup of our urban sawmill, and we feel like it's a tremendous opportunity to take advantage of a resource in the urban area that's been going to waste, and it also is a great opportunity to bring some terrific manufacturing jobs into an area that desperately needs them.
That's for sure. So where in Newark, where did you get your funding, where do you get your trees?
Well, the trees come from a variety of sources, mainly from the larger tree services, but also from the municipalities. And so there's a fair amount of volume of material out there, and by having convenient open hours and facilitating the dropping off, we find that there's a lot of interest in what we're doing with the material, and we're starting to see a pretty good flow.
Okay, you pay for this yourself? Do you have state or federal funding? Did you? How'd you? This sounds expensive.
Well, I mean, there is a fair amount of investment necessary, particularly in an urban setting like this, to get the operation up and running. A combination of, you know, capital investment in the machinery, but also working capital to facilitate the ramp up. And we've been very lucky. We have worked with Prudential Social Investment Fund, and they have loaned us the majority of the money to get the project going.
Just a loan, not a grant?
That's it. Well, this is pretty significant in terms of getting the, you know, the funding needed for this type of project. And so we were very, very pleased to be able to get the loan from Prudential. It's been given on very, you know, very good terms that are aligned with the social mission of the investment fund. Because an important part of what we're doing here is creating jobs and doing a lot of job training, because you really can't find any Sawyers in Essex County, New Jersey. And you know, it's, as you might imagine. So this is a great opportunity for us to go out and bring in disadvantaged youth and maybe bring in some chronic unemployed folks that are looking for manufacturing work, and give them full job training so they understand how the key pieces of machinery work in a sawmill, and give them a chance to earn a living wage and produce some, you know, some very good product.
Sounds like an absolutely wonderful thing. What part of Newark are you in?
We're over on Springdale Avenue, which is up by the boundary with East Orange.
Okay, so next question is, can you get there by mass transit?
Yes, there are bus lines nearby and that allow folks to, you know, navigate their way over to us.
That's a very New York-centric question. Can I get
there? Yeah, well, it's fortunately Newark has a sufficient mass transit to be able to get to our neck of the woods.
This is Quentin Stanton. Quentin and I work together, and Quentin has a bicycle but not a car. So if you wanted to be a Sawyer, Quentin, you'd have to move out there to East Orange or something.
Maybe, yeah.
Now, we always ask that question because we kind of bleed green, and we think, well, okay, doing the right thing in terms of hiring people to be sawyers and harvesting urban windfall trees is all good, but if you have to drive to get there, then there's, you know, the recipe isn't quite complete. So I'm glad to hear that there are at least bus lines.
Absolutely. And we feel we can draw from a real local population, so we don't envision people having long commutes to get to our operation.
That's good. So I think early on, we heard that you have a temporary mill that's operating already?
Yes, we've put the first piece of equipment in place, and you know, over the next 18, 24 months, we'll be ramping up various phases of the project and bringing more equipment online and hiring more folks and doing more job training. It is definitely is something that has to be very methodical, because everybody has to be trained coming in. They're really all starting at a zero baseline in terms of how to work in a sawmill and you know, how to look at optimizing the yield from a log and how to treat different species of wood, and there's a lot to teach.
Wow. So it's more than just manhandling or taking a heavy machine and putting a log on a piece of equipment, and it doesn't automatically saw up a log for you.
Yeah. No, there's a fair amount of judgment that's required, and one thing I don't think Andy shared with you, but we're both quite proud of, is I believe 20-30% of our employees will be part of our training program that we run, an 8-10 month program. We still haven't finalized it. It's very, very fresh. The paint hasn't dried. And that we're going to take these young individuals and give them true machine skills, to teach them how to run a chainsaw, drive a forklift, develop a resume, and allow them to go trained with a history to, like in the arborist industry, this is a job that cannot be exported. So if that tree falls down the end of your road or the end of your driveway and you can't get to work, you can't call an arborist in China to remove that tree. These are green collar jobs that, you know, you need a local person to be able to hand it, or, you know, with the storm we just had. And the employers on these industries they're really looking for somebody who's, you know, job ready. And if the individual has a chainsaw safety training and CPR and knows how to handle the saw and knows how to work around the log, they've got a leg up on getting a new job position. And usually these industries pay a fair living wage. It's not something that a man, you know, an individual, male or female, can raise a family on the wage of these arborists and line clearing contracts, or even open a door into, hopefully, to getting placed with some local utilities. So
that's
it
really
does have a ladder with upward momentum.
So even if they don't stay with you and become a sawyer, they still learned something good, and that helps get the word about what you're doing into the community.
If they don't ever want to see a log again, they can get a job in a warehouse because they've been certified to run forklifts, and they have a real, you know, where's an inner-city individual going to learn to, you know, run a chainsaw? Right?
That's good.
Or drive a forklift. I mean,
okay.
That's a cool job.
Yeah. So going back to City Log, how many board feet a year are you processing there?
On a board forge basis, it's not a high amount. I mean, maybe 3/4 or 1 million feet a year. It's not a high amount. We like to say since we value added, we generate a nice product line, because not only are we just sawing it, is that we take that lumber and actually, you know, make that kitchen table or make that kitchen or you know, your millwork. So we really value added. So we really increase. We're not just selling a raw product.
Right.
I would have to say, I think our last year, just shy of 1 million feet a year.
Yeah, that's pretty, you know, that's decent when you consider that you're not Weyerhaeuser, you know? You're not doing
No, we're far from it.
You're not doing a commodity.
We're not a commodity mill. We're definitely not a commodity mill. And we really don't care, because our people, our customers, understand the uniqueness of an urban tree. Traditionally, lumber has been always sold as a percentage of clears, meaning, you know, the board has to be, you know, the less knots or swirls or character in the board, the better for the traditional hardwood industry, which, you know, well, for us, the urban wood generates a lot of character and some beautiful patterns. So the people who appreciate the urban wood really appreciate the uniqueness of that. From a lumber end of it, it's a low grade log, but our customers seem to value, and, you know, they like to sit on a walk on the floor that came from the property where the house was built off of. So this has that, like I like to say, that credit card $1 million feeling.
Okay, well, I don't know about the $1 million feeling, but it sounds like a really great value. Yeah, as you say, value-added service. But for people to, supposing we had a client and they didn't have a property with trees and they wanted to see what was available, they'd have to come out to your operation in central Pennsylvania to look at the logs?
Well, you can actually visit us in Newark.
Uh-huh.
So that's one of the reasons since the company is called City Log and it is City Wood, now we're actually producing it in the city and creating city jobs. So it really is, you can hop on the bus and come and stop right at the corner and walk half a block in and you're here. So, yeah, the uniqueness of that, we are looking forward to maybe one day have more of a digital presentation where actually we'll train these individuals, like a virtual lumberyard, where we'll tag and number each board and photograph it, and maybe try to sell some of the uniqueness on an internet situation.
Uh-huh.
But with a piece of wood and natural item, it's always best to come by and take a look at it and see what the uniqueness of the tree is.
Oh, absolutely. Back to black locust. Just in your own business, how much black locust are you actually being able to sell these years lately?
Well, we're blessed. We can pretty well sell everything we can get our hands on. So we're moving a lot of material. We have a source of supply. I have a full-time forester. We keep him quite busy. He drives a lot of miles, and, you know, we run hard. The uniqueness of the locust is it's a spotty tree, meaning on a timber sale or a logging harvest, there might be only a couple loads there or half a truck load, so you really have to chase it. And we have developed a system to chase the wood and develop a very unique program with the black locust.
So there's not a great amount of black locust that's available at any given time, is that correct?
No, I wouldn't say that. There is a lot of locust out there. It's just that it's not the species traditionally that the loggers were looking for, the mills are looking to buy. So a lot of times we spend a lot of time educating the individual landowners and foresters that if you have locusts, you know, can give us a call. We're buying it. We're looking for it. People want it. And we're just creating awareness. But we also have to be proactive and like I said, send a truck in for half a load up a side of a mountain. I've been up some pretty steep mountains in the hills of West Virginia just to pick up three quarters of a load here. So we're very aggressive on our procurement side. It's not a species that you could say there's, 4 million feet in the inventory at all times. I wish I could say that. We're blessed with an ample supply. We're always looking to grow. Our business is we're blessed with potential, future growth. But it does have its uniqueness and it does have its issue. And so this is all part of what makes locust so unique.
Is anybody replanting locust, or is it just operating as a weed tree? Is this a wonderful product that we can enjoy for the next 10 years, and then it'll be all gone because no one replanted it?
Well, we are actively working. We have a major customer who we're working with our domestic hardwood outdoor furniture line, and we're working to tie up a piece of an old strip mine in central Pennsylvania that's been restored. They've taken put the hills back out of it, and we're looking to actually develop reseed it with locusts and sort of replace what we've taken.
That's good. That's an important thing.
So it's there, and we're actually looking to manage that with a horse logging operation. We'll take these young people.
Horse logging.
Yep. That's... We'll train them on, and we'll mow the pastures with the horses, and it's all part of our training situation.
I like that. Can I ask, where do you mostly use the black locust, or what do your customers use it for? What kind of applications?
Well, the locust has been used from everywhere, from a young man making snow skis to making decking for a yacht in Malta, to traditional decking, to outdoor furniture. We do a lot of locust into wooden boat hobbyists. There's a whole network of individuals who still use wooden sailboats to garden clubs, to greenhouses. It continues to amaze me what people would use a locust for. We had an industrial application where they're actually building a freezer warehouse, and we made locust blocks, and they used them as an insulating barrier for a thermal break between the concrete slab and the steel frame. So it's amazing where it can go into.
That is insulating properties, too. That is amazing.
That's really good.
I don't know about the insulating, but it was just the idea it was a thermal break from the concrete to the steel frame.
I see. Yeah.
Super. I want to take one other break and then come back and talk about... I heard this rumor that you're going to run your sawmill on wood waste. And then if we have a few more minutes, we can talk about composting toilets. Burning Down the House on Heritage Radio Network. We're talking with Stubby and Andy from City Logs about sustainable harvesting of urban timber and then also native Appalachian black locusts. So I heard this rumor that you're going to run your sawmill on wood waste. Sounds like a great idea. Is that true?
That is correct. We've developed a system using wood gasification, and it's basically a traditional model where 100 years ago the sawmills would burn their waste, and they'd have a steam engine, and they'd run all their mills off the waste off their logs. And we've basically here reinventing the wheel, looking back in time, and just using a modern technology of wood gasification and creating a gas, and we're going to flare that gas off and generate power through the burning of our waste, our slabs, our sawdust. So there'd be nothing in a sawmill. The only thing you can't sell is a squeak. And every product has a home, whether it's the bark, it's the sawdust, it's the lumber, it's the slabs. There's always a home for everything.
So how you're fermenting your wood chips or something like that?
No, we're actually it's called wood gasification. It's 1880s technology. That was during the Second World War. The Scandinavians, and I think even the Germans, there was an oil shortage with the war. They were able to run buses and vehicles, and basically you can combust the wood under a controlled atmosphere, and you take the gas, and you can run that in an internal combustion engine or flare it, and you can make flames, and you can heat. And, it's just an old way that's sort of forgotten.
So you produce methane gas, and then you can run a turbine or a...
Yep, you flare it off, or a boiler, or an engine. It'll actually fuel a gaseous diesel engine that, it's very similar to what the methane is used. The same type of an engine that'll burn the methane off of a landfill.
Uh huh.
And that'll turn. What's unique about Newark, we're going to capture not only the electricity, but we're also going to capture the waste heat, and we're going to build this sawmill to be running. We'll generate our power. We're net metered. We'll heat our operation. We'll use it for our process needs, for our dry kilns. We'll also heat our structures. We're going to use old shipping containers that we're going to fabricate into our structures for our offices. We're going to have a greenhouse. We're going to demonstrate hydroponics and ways of utilizing this heat instead of just blowing it up in the air. We're going to capture every BTU.
A true urban ecology.
Well, part of what we're trying to do is we're also, and this is something that Andy and I want to share. Andy here are very excited about it, and we're developing an educational outreach on a grade 6 level, and where we want to teach the children that the trees have shade, oxygen, habitat, but what happens to a tree when it comes down. So we're actually going to follow a log from Mrs. Jones' front yard, and they can witness that through a digital picture of why it came down, and we'll paint the name on the log, and when they come to the sawmill for a tour, one thing about a sawmill, it's very fast, it's very quick, there's lots of activity. It's not like watching paint dry. They can watch the log run through the process of the sawmill, and we'll manufacture tree stakes, and then on the way back home to the classroom, we'll give them a sapling, tree stakes from the old tree, and they'll plant the new tree, on the site of the old tree, supported with the tree stakes manufactured from the existing previous tree. So they can sort of see the full circle, the continuation of how one tree is gone, but the wood from that tree has allowed another tree to grow. So this is, hopefully, that gives them an idea to go into the sciences or something different that will spark their interest.
It's very exciting. That is really wonderful. Well, you should get some funding from the state educational fund for that. Or I guess governments are broke, so you're just doing it, right?
We're just doing it because it's just something we'd like to do. I mean, I was fortunate in my youth that people took me under their arm, and hopefully, one day some young person will say, geez, I remember going to the sawmill, and that made me think of something, and I never thought of that, and show people something different. And this is something we can do as simple people, simple men, that we can show them, the usage of a wood product and how, that Mrs. Jones log will not go into a landfill or ground up for mulch, that it can actually be used to a usable product that can sustain something else, the new tree that's going to be planted to replace it.
That's really great. That's terrific. And what about your other side business of composting toilets? That's sort of interesting. I mean,
well, as you can sort of see, we're kind of a non-traditional sawmill. We're really using the sawmill as a learning center. We have this educational outreach. We also have the job training component into our model. Andy and I have worked very, very hard to incorporate that. We're looking to generate our own power. We're going to be, we're going to capture our own rainwater. We're going to be utilizing shipping containers because they are part of the neighborhood. We're fabricating all our own products. We're going to build our own furniture, make our own windows, window frames, doors. Everything we're going to do is self-homemade. And part of the idea is to demonstrate the water is more valuable, will be more valuable. Fresh water is a very valuable limited resource. So years ago I looked at a system that will allow you to use a low-flow toilet and actually a urine-separating toilet, and a system also out of Sweden called an Aquatron, which would allow you to separate the solids from the liquid, and we're going to take the liquid, sterilize it with a UV light, and we use that as drip irrigation, I should say, and we're going to be using that for coppicing willow. So we'll demonstrate that we can raise our own fuel. You know, coppice is a quick rotation of the willow tree, which was historically done way back in the days of old. And so we're really looking to demonstrate different forward to the North American viewpoint. But you know, these systems have been used in Europe for quite a few years. And the urine sorting toilet is something that really fascinates me because the nitrogen in the urine is a natural fertilizer. If anybody's walked a dog and they saw where the dog has done a little business, you come back and the green is a little greener there. Well, that's the nitrogen in the urine, and we're going to utilize that on our green roof to demonstrate the greenness of the nitrogen, where traditionally now we take natural gas and we make our nitrogen off the natural gas. So the farmer is spreading natural gas-derived nitrogen on their fields, which is depleting that when the good Lord gave us the most, a human body to manufacture this ourselves. So we're really going to push the envelope on different ways to make this a visiting location where people can experience some different ideas and some, different unique aspects of being green and working green.
That's really wonderful. What is the address of this little paradise?
Well, right now there's not but a field there, but it's coming. Andy can
yeah, that's 182 Springdale Avenue in Newark.
Okay.
And as Stubby said, it's a bit of a field right now. I should say it's a brown field. And one of the things we're looking to do is also demonstrate how a brown field can be well utilized and developed. So that's going to be part of the overall presentation, that we're doing things in a variety of ways to minimize the impact on the site, and which is what you'd always want to do on a brownfield.
Well, brownfields come in many different flavors. What was there that polluted the land?
Well, it's interesting, the history of this site. There was a big company, the Worthington Pump Company, that was world-renowned for making complex pumps. And they had been around for decades and decades and, in fact, had been a significant player in World War II with pumps for ships and various industrial applications. Eventually, Worthington Pump went out of business. Production was moved to different parts of the U.S. and overseas, and they were bought by another company. And this site went dormant for a long period of time, and then there was a cleanup and remediation that was done. And now it's slowly coming back. It's typically been used in the last 10 years mainly for equipment storage, the storage of trucks and various pieces of mobile equipment. But the landlords are very progressive, and they're looking to bring back more meaningful tenants onto the site, and we're part of that movement.
So the remediation there was the removal of heavy metals?
I don't want to get into all the sort of compounds and stuff that were there, but there were some heavy metals and some things that needed to be done. This was not sort of a terrible brown field. It definitely needed work, but the things that were there were fairly standard things that, you know, were regularly disposed of back in the, you know, 30s, 40s, 50s, and 60s.
Yeah.
Without anybody really giving a second thought to it.
Oh, that gets me around to one question that I forgot to ask before, which is after you do your wood gasification, what's left? Eventually you extract everything you can from the wood waste. What's left in the end? Ash?
There's a small amount of a very fine ash that's left that could actually be used as, correct me if I'm wrong, Sophie, but it could be used as fertilizer, as an end product or soil augmentation.
Interesting. Or you could sell it to a soap company, maybe? It must be very alkali, right?
We haven't had an analyzed, but I'm sure, you could use it for fly ash. I mean, it's a very, very fine. The beauty of the gasification is it's very, very total combustion. It's a 2,200-degree flame, so you're really destroying anything in there. So it's very, very efficient in the combustion.
Uh-huh. Well, this is really exciting. So, how long before you have all of these things in place? Matter of 2 years, 3 years, 5, 10 years? What's your plan?
We're on a rapid. We're fairly quickly. We're actually sawing right now on a temporary sawmill. The main sawmill is coming next week, and it should probably be a couple 3 months to fabricate that. The power system. Pieces are already being manufactured as we speak. We should be, I know Andy's very much familiar with that.
I'd say by next summer we will have the core of the operation running well, and then there will be some additional phases that we're doing that should be done within, say, 24 months from now.
That's terrific. Well, here's where
you're welcome to come and visit us.
I hope that we will. Here's where you get to plug your business. What are your two main URLs?
Oh, yes. The primary is www.citilogs.com.
And Stubby mentioned one that was devoted just to Black Locust.
Yeah, that's blacklocustlumber.com.
Very good. But it all goes to the same place, yes?
Yeah, pretty well.
Pretty much. All right. Thank you so much. This has been really educational. I learned a lot, and I thank you for your time. Hope that we all can promote the use of black lumber and stop importing stuff from South America. Not that the South Americans don't need our business, but rather we need to see what we can do to use local materials. And it sounds like it's not any more local than just around the corner. Thanks so much. This has been Burning Down the House on Heritage Radio Network. I'm Curtis B. Wayne. Thank you for listening. Keep the faith.
Thanks for listening to this program on the Heritage Radio Network. You can find all of our archived programs on heritageradionetwork.com, as well as a schedule of upcoming live shows. You can also podcast all of our programs on iTunes by searching Heritage Radio Network in the iTunes Store. You can find us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter for up-to-date news and information. Thanks for listening.